After 2 years of being completely virtual, Becker's Healthcare is happy to share that our 12th annual meeting is back in person. Join us for one of our most robust events of the year, happening April 25th through April 28th at the Hyatt Regency in Chicago, Illinois. To find out if you're able to join us at this event free of charge, email us at registration@beckershealthcare.com. View the conference agenda and learn more about the show by checking out our conference pages at beckershospitalreview.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brian Zimmerman with Becker's Healthcare. Thank you for tuning into the Becker's Healthcare podcast series. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by our guest for a discussion on community hospital financial optimization. Michael Morgan, Senior Vice President of Strategic Analysis with Community Hospital Corporation, is our guest. Michael, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. It's great to be here.
So let's dive right in. Just to begin here, can you give our listeners out there sort of the lay of the land when it comes to the current situation for community hospitals out there?
Yeah, you know, Community Hospital Corporation, you know, really we exist to support community hospitals and have done so now for 25 years. And I think, you know, I'm going to kind of give this answer a little bit of pre and post pandemic flavor for the listeners. Even pre-pandemic, community hospitals generally are just in a more financially challenged position than their urban counterparts. The reasons for that mainly are aging populations, a higher reliance on government payer sources, more labor challenges, difficulty with providers, bringing providers into the community, both from a kind of contract standpoint, as well as from employing physicians. It's just a little bit more difficult to get providers, especially young providers, out to some of the markets where we operate facilities in. And those things have just led to a more financially challenged environment, unfortunately, for many, many community hospitals in the past. And then COVID enters the picture, right? And it's just a whole other set of financial challenges and issues to navigate through. You know, I think similar to hospitals industry-wide, the beginning of the pandemic was really more focused on the immediate service discontinuations, the having to hit pause for most of our hospitals on the elective surgeries was a severe challenge at the beginning of the pandemic. The PPE shortages, these things were all issues that we worked diligently to help our hospitals and our facilities navigate post-pandemic. And then as the pandemic has moved along and has entered into new stages with the different variants and so forth, and fortunately, kind of industry-wide, we've been able to navigate the PPE shortages better, and those aren't nearly as much of a concern as they were back at the beginning of the pandemic timeline. It's really focused more on the labor side. Currently, labor is by far the biggest issue facing our facilities. You know, for as compared to many of our urban counterparts, there's not nearly as much of a labor pool in our communities to pull from to get, you know, people into the facility. We've seen nursing shortages like many other hospitals all over the country in our communities. It's been a difficult road from a nursing labor standpoint, from a clinical labor standpoint. And we've had to get creative. On the cost side, we've seen the reliance on staffing agencies and contract nurses and so forth dramatically increase recently. So that's been something that we've had to deal with as well. You know, I think the pandemic has brought some beneficial aspects to the way that our hospitals operate. One of those areas is in telehealth. So I think that with our communities and with some of the maybe disadvantages that many of our community hospitals face, some of the advances that we've seen recently on the telehealth side have really been, you know, a breath of fresh air in many ways, because, you know, if patients are able to access their providers through telecommunications, through video chats and so forth, that does help to alleviate some of the constraints that we've encountered in the past, which is having those providers in the community. So that's there has been some silver lining to that equation. And certainly telehealth is one of those ways that we've seen community hospitals really benefit from some of the new technologies that have been pushed out during the pandemic that were brought about specifically because of the pandemic. You know, I think in many ways it really just advanced a lot of those technologies and trends that were already in development before all of this happened. It really just accelerated that timeline of deploying them, and then on the political side and on the reimbursement side, forcing everyone to really get around the table and talk about, you know, how are these things reimbursed? How are they regulated? You know, how is the provider aspect of it regulated? And so, you know, we're hopeful that those conversations continue to happen, and that, on down the road, we find ourselves in a kind of a new era where technology can be better deployed for community hospitals and address some of the constraints that we've seen in the past.
Yeah. So what you laid out there, you know, it's really, pandemic has sort of accelerated a potentially positive changes and transformations that could benefit community hospitals, but it's exacerbated, you know, those legacy challenges that community hospitals have been sort of up against. And when you think about those challenges, I think about it as sort of like staffing crisis, some of the other things, the pandemic, like a lot of this stuff feels just like almost existential and hard to wrap your arms around and control. But I imagine if you're a financial leader in a community hospital, and so can you talk a little bit about like how really watching and tracking your financial performance has become so important, and what kind of maybe benefits it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think kind of getting back to the timeline of the pandemic, at the beginning, you know, when outpatient surgeries are suspended, when there's all of these, you know, regulations coming down immediately from you know, the state and federal governments and so forth, and it's there's really significant revenue disruption. I mean, Brian, it's exactly what you said. It's an existential, you know, okay, how do we even financially begin to understand the state that our organization is in and kind of the immediate future? You know, you throw all your budgets out the window because none of it is really going to pan out that way. And I think, you know, you saw from the federal side with the CARES Act, an immediate recognition of those needs in the healthcare industry and in the industry, you know, that's the tip of the spear as far as dealing with the pandemic is concerned, right? So, you know, hospitals all across the country obviously received the CARES Act funds, the provider relief funds, you know, the Paycheck Protection Program. All of these governmental assistance programs were created very, very quickly and pushed out to the community at large, and many specifically to the healthcare industry. And so, you know, really it's a big process on the financial side, at least on the front end, was doing our best to understand what these programs were, what were the terms and conditions of these funds. Those things were constantly changing for quite a long time. And so, you know, really from a financial management standpoint, for us, it was just a lot of communication. It was a lot of education with, you know, oftentimes incomplete sets of facts for our boards. You know, we work with community hospitals, with community board members, many of whom are not kind of steeped in healthcare professionally. You know, these are community leaders who are serving and volunteering in support of the hospital. So we're trying to educate them on, you know, what do these things mean? And from a management kind of operator standpoint, what are the recommendations that we're bringing to the table? So communication is huge. And I think, you know, it was really an amazing thing just to see how these communities rallied around their hospitals, their healthcare providers. I mean, we talked about community hospitals and sort of the existential issues that we face. You know, think about for a lot of these communities, if they didn't have these hospitals in town, you know, what would they have done at the onset of a global pandemic? I mean, it's really a pretty staggering thought to have. And so we saw that. We saw the appreciation from the community, the support. I mean, you know, I think everyone's seen, you know, stories all across the country about communities really rallying around their caregivers, their clinical staffs, and their hospitals. And certainly we saw that as well. And you know, I'd had a plug in here now. some of that feels like it's waned a little bit, you know, as we're 2+ years into this thing. And
I was thinking that while you were talking, kind of feels like the momentum behind that is not as robust, I guess.
Not as robust. And so, you know, I would encourage, you know, those folks listening to keep up that attitude and that support, because, you know, our caregivers need it. And it's certainly been, you know, an odyssey. It's been a long road. And I think everybody feels that in many different ways.
Yeah. And I think if we go back to like spring 2020, that was horrible. But at least there was this sort of, widespread support in the culture at large for community hospitals, for providers in general. Mm-hmm. And this time around, like we talked about, it's a little less robust, and people I talk to, it just sounds very deflating, for a lot of folks. Is that what you're seeing as well?
It is. I mean, it gets back to the labor, the labor issues, and even with the way some of the variants have progressed, you know, there are areas of the country where, they're in crisis, levels of staffing, and the CDC recommendations are changing quickly in some instances. And, you know, everybody's just, you're kind of on the whipsaw a little bit. It's sort of back and forth. And so we do our best to focus on what we can control, right? So asking that question, what in this can we control and what can we not, and then responding accordingly. So, I think that we talked about the ways that the pandemic had accelerated some of these shifts and some of these trends that we had been seeing on the technology side. I think that's also true on the labor side. I mean, I think really the pandemic has served to accelerate some of these labor trends and shortages that you know, economists and demographers and everyone has been talking about for quite some time, about both the provider shortages, sort of what folks see when they look into the future about the levels of caregivers relative to the community and the need and so forth. And all of that's really been accelerated. And then when you factor in even, you know, macroeconomic trends like inflation and some of the things that we've seen recently, that creates, you know, sort of a rock in the pond ripple effect as well, because, you know, for many of our communities, if the cost of living, if you know, inflation's taking place and the retailers down the street are raising their wages, especially for jobs, things like EVS, laundry, that, you know, hospitals have so many positions and so many people and team members that they depend on to operate smoothly. And if people have better opportunities financially to go do things elsewhere, they're going to look at those. And so that's another, you know, question that we've all had to grapple with, is how do we counteract some of those things, especially like you said, in such a, you know, challenging, physically, emotionally taxing time like the COVID pandemic. I mean, they're all difficult questions to answer, but ones we all need to be asking ourselves.
Yeah, very true. And you know, we could go probably on and on and on about the labor crisis and inflation and the various other things sort of influencing community hospitals' financial well-being and the well-being of staff. In the spirit of thinking about controlling the controllables, I want to give listeners out there maybe like some really tangible takeaways from here, from this conversation. So the question I want to ask then, Michael, is what types of metrics are really going to be most helpful to track in order to really help these hospitals improve financial performance? Can you share some insights on that?
For many of our community hospitals, you know, cash is king, obviously. So with every phase of the pandemic, it's trying to answer the question, you know, how much cash do we have in the bank? How many days cash on hand? How are we managing those funds? And again, we touched on the provider relief funds, the CARES Act funds. You know, we've been through these sort of peaks and valleys where the federal government is sending money directly to healthcare providers that's needed. But then it's the onus is on those healthcare providers to use those funds according to the terms, to document them properly, and to really understand how those you know, I'll call them extraordinary items, really affect your overall financial management. Labor's a good example again. I mean, for hospitals seeing dramatic increases in the costs of their staffing agency costs, for hospitals having to rely much more heavily on staffing agencies for RNs or respiratory therapists or whatever the positions might be, you know, it's thinking about it in the sense of where are we at now? You know, what's happening now within our organization? How are we tracking those things? And then how are we planning for the future? You know, how are we planning to, as best we can, stop relying so much on the agency nurses? What can we do creatively to try to recruit better? How can we, you know, better build a pipeline of clinical staff coming out of school and so forth? So, you know, really a lot of the financial conversations can lead to broader operational conversations. And those are good conversations to be having. And then I think, you know, the other focus can be on the top line side as well, on the revenue side. You know, everybody has shifted the way that they budget, has looked at the way that they do financial management a little differently since the pandemic. And so I think everybody's asking that question, you know, are we in the endemic stage? What does the future look like? And how do you financially prepare for that? And getting back to the cash conversation, I think, you know, the more cushion that you can have to weather any sort of unforeseen circumstances, the better. And I think the other thing I would add here is, especially for our community hospitals, you know, political advocacy is a huge component, I think, especially in over the last 2 years during the pandemic, because, you know, it's really important for our healthcare leaders to be able to communicate to our elected officials, you know, here's what's happening in my hospital. Here's what's happening with my labor costs. My contract labor has increased 300%, you know, this time this year compared to this time last year. And all of those things to really help illustrate what the situation is and really what needs to happen at the governmental level as well. All that needs to be effectively communicated. And so I think just having those financial conversations internally, being really, really good stewards of the resources we have available to us now, and you know, communicating well, both with the local leadership of our facilities, for those folks to be communicating well with the board of the hospital, and then also keeping local and state and federal officials in the loop of what's going on is hugely important. And our hospital associations do a great job of that too, right? I mean, there's lots of channels to have those conversations. And so I think, you know, for us, just knowing who needs to know what and you know, how can we be effectively communicating the situation is of the utmost importance.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting to think about, sort of having these financial conversations as a empowering thing internally, but also sort of externally within your community, the advocacy you talked about. I'm curious about, like, could you just share, like, I think it sounds like these conversations are continuous and often, but can you talk a little bit more about maybe like the cadence of how often metrics should be measured, or the cadence of these types of conversations? Like, what are you seeing there?
You know, that's a different answer depending on who you're talking about. I mean, I think internally within our organization, sort of top down CEO, CFO, on down to the department leaders and so forth, I mean, I think those conversations are continuous. I mean, we do our best to, especially revenue, you know, track even many times daily, sort of what's going on. Where are our volume levels at for the month, even mid-month? What's our projected revenue? Where are we at on some of the larger expenses? Certainly, we you know, manage productivity. There's a lot of focus that we place on that, with labor being such a large percentage of our operating expense. And so I think internally those conversations are happening often, especially, you know, between, you know, our CEO and our CFO. And then, you know, I think if there are significant kind of mid-month things that are going on, our hospital leadership can keep the board apprised of that. Certainly there's processes to review financial information, statistics, utilization, cash flow, at the monthly board meetings, and many of our hospitals have finance committees as well. So there's procedures and things in place to make sure that communication is happening. And then also, I think from the departmental level, for the leadership of the hospitals to be having consistent conversations with the department leaders, that's a very important back and forth of our leaders trying to work towards and meet budgets that are set and financial accountability and so forth. But then also hearing back from the departmental leaders. I mean, it's a large task to manage labor effectively. It takes everybody kind of rowing the boat in the same direction. We want our leaders and our directors and our frontline staff and everyone to be understanding what's going on in the organization, to feel like, they're supported by their leaders. And then also, having everybody have those levels of communication to understand their departmental budgets, to understand what's expected from a labor management standpoint. All of that goes hand in hand to effectively manage the finances of a hospital.
Yeah. And for this final question, Michael, I think I want to maybe zero in even more on the benefits of this type of communication, which is I want to ask about employee buy-in for these types of financial improvement initiatives. And I imagine communication is just huge there. So how do you get employee buy-in on these financial improvement initiatives that are just so essential right now?
Yeah, I think a big part of that is again, just getting back to that communication. People buy in when they generally know what's going on. I think it's the leadership's responsibility also to, kind of be casting that vision, to be sharing with people, here's what's going on, here's where we're headed as an organization, here's how we're trying to make this a better environment for you to be in. Certainly that's been difficult in the midst of the pandemic because of the uncertainty. And we already touched on, the kind of Groundhog Day nature of it a little bit. It seems like for 2 years, everybody's just been saying, hold on 2 more weeks, we'll get through this wave and then we'll be through it. And that just simply hasn't been the case. And who knows what that will look like in the future. So, I think getting that buy-in both financially and just organizationally, it comes down to good communication. It comes down to open conversations. I think there's lots of proactive and productive ways that organizations can implement strategies and structures for the employees to be heard. I mean, I think there's lots of ways where the leadership of hospitals can really care for their staff, and with some of those supplemental funds, many of our facilities have done some incentive type initiatives for the staff in the hospital after all that they've been through and the opportunities that they might have elsewhere and so forth. I mean, there's financial things that can be done as well. But ultimately, I think it's just that sharing of the vision and being able to communicate to people effectively to help them know where the hospital's headed and to be, frankly, that voice of optimism in a maybe a little bit of a pessimistic time. So.
Yeah, I think we could all use that, but especially folks working in community hospitals on the ground. Michael, really appreciate the time. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. It's been great to get to connect and share a little bit.
Absolutely. I also want to thank our podcast sponsor, Community Hospital Corporation. You can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com/podcasts.